This is Tape 1, Side B, of the Open University course English 102, Composition and Native Indian Literature 1. On this tape, course author Patty Hartford talks to Delphine Derrickson, a granddaughter of Mourning Dove's sister Margaret. After a brief introductory chat, Delphine reads excerpts from Mourning Dove's story, Coyote Imitates Bear and Kingfisher. The date of this interview is March 22, 1993. Delphine Derrickson is at the Anaukin International School of Writing in Penticton. Patty Hartford is at her home in Kamloops, and their conversation was recorded at the Open Learning Agency in Burnaby. Now, here are Patty Hartford and Delphine Derrickson.
I really want to start out by asking you what your relationship is to Mourning Dove.
She is my grandmother's sister. So she is my, on my mother's side, she is my grand aunt. Like, she's my grandmother's.
Did you know
my mother's side?
Sorry, what was that?
She is, Mourning Dove is my grandmother Margaret's sister. So she is my grand aunt on my mother's side.
Okay, good. Did you know her personally?
No.
Were you living concurrently with her or?
No.
So what you know and remember about her has come from family?
Family and what I've read from her book, Coyote Stories.
What did you call her? What does the family call her?
I would call her Stimtima.
That's a new one to me.
That's grandmother.
Okay. All right. There are three names that she was known by. Her christened name, Christine.
Mm-hmm.
And the Humishuma, can you explain that to us a little?
Her Christian name? Hemismus?
The Humishuma name.
Hemismus.
Okay.
I speak the language fluent, so I will... I'll correct you. Hemismus?
Yes.
Well, the way she's got it spelled here is phonetic spelling, but there's the international alphabet spelling of Hemismus.
And how did she get that name?
I guess it was given to her.
By her family?
Yes, by her, probably her mother or her grandmother. She talks about her grandmother.
What does it mean?
Means Mourning Dove.
So the translation then, Mourning Dove, is simply the English translation of her Okanagan name.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what kinds of things have the family remembered and carried on about her?
That she went around, gathered the stories, and recorded it after she became an adult. And that's how Coyote Stories came to be. Those are legends.
Were those stories that she would have been very familiar with anyway, or was this an extra effort on her part to collect these stories?
It was an extra effort on her part to record it, to write it, because she knew since the coming of the Europeans that we would lose our storytelling, which is history to us, the way we pass on important events.
What kinds of things do they remember personally about her?
That she's the first Native writer and that she worked very hard. She was a laborer. She worked 10 hours a day working in orchards, wherever she could get work, traveled around and throughout, like Fairview as Oliver, and she was in the States also. She traveled back and forth to collect stories and worked hard and carried a typewriter, a manual typewriter. She'd type in the evenings. And before that, she took her first training in Alberta to learn how to type, because during those days, which was probably the 1800s, because she was born in 1888 and she died in 1936. So between 1936, before 1936, she took her training in Alberta, because that's the only place that they would allow a Native woman to take secretarial typing training.
That's a sad reflection, isn't it?
Yes. When I read that in my research, I did research, and I was kind of shocked that she had to go to Alberta. But that's how determined she was to record these stories.
What kind of response did she get from people who read the stories?
I guess the response was really good, but a kind of negative from some people, from Natives, because that's not our way. And our way was oral. You know, we passed on history and stories and important events oral back then.
So the non-Native people accepted the stories better than many of the Native people?
Yes. But it's more valuable today, the stories now, because it's luckily that she continued and she had determination to continue to write.
Well, why don't you read to us the passage that you've chosen from Coyote Imitates Bear and Kingfisher?
Okay, well, I'm going to start now. I'll read from the Coyote Stories of Mourning Dove, which was published in 1933, I believe. And this is the foreword by Chief Standing Bear. I'll just read bits and pieces. I won't read the whole thing. And then I'll go into the story. Storytelling is an ancient profession, and these stories are among our oldest possessions. For many years before the white man came to our homeland, these legends were told over and over and handed down from generation to generation. They were our books, our literature, and the memories of the storytellers were the leaves upon which they were written. Storytelling was and is today a means of pastime, but the real value of tribal stories lay in the fact that they were closely related to the lives of the people. As a history and as literature, they became inherited traditions. They were as wide in their character as the experiences of the people. They told of travels, adventures, and discoveries. In them and through them lived our brave and heroic. There were those that carried lessons and morals for daily guidance. Then, too, there were fairy tales, lovely in their fantasy of thought. And that's by Chief Standing Bear. And this is by Mourning Dove. My people are the Okanagans and the Tsleil-Waututh Colville, closely related sales and tribes, and I also have relatives in the Nicola band of the Thompson River Indians in British Columbia. My father's mother was a Nicola, and his father was a Hudson's Bay Company man, a hardy adventurous. My father, Joseph Quintasket Dark Cloud, was born in the Upper Okanagan community near Kelowna, B.C., but has lived since a boy with the Lower Okanagan and the Colville, south of the international boundary. It is with the Lower or River Okanagan and the Tsleil-Waututh on the Colville River, reservation in northeastern Washington that I'm identified. This is Mourning Dove. She's identified with, I guess. Her mother's name was Lucy Stoiken. She was a Tsleil-Waututh full-blood. Her grandfather was Sihuilchken, who was head chief of the tribe for many years. When the American government made the tribe give up its home in the Colville Valley in 1872 and moved to poor land on the other side of the Columbia, my mother was born at Kettle Falls, the big falls of these legends, and she and her father were married in a log church at that location. The church was built by Indians who had accepted teachings of the missionaries. She was born in a canoe on the Kootenai River near Bonner's Ferry, Idaho, in the moon of the leaves, this is in her words, April 1888. And her parents were traveling with a pack train, and her uncle, Louis Stuyken, and my mother and grandmother were being ferried across the river when I arrived. The Indian who was paddling the canoe stripped off his shirt and handed it to my grandmother, who wrapped me up in it. It used to be the custom for storytellers to go from village to village and relate chip-chap tikus to the children. That is what she gathered. Now, part of the chip-chap tikus legends, coyote imitates bear and kingfisher. One time during the moons of snow, coyote and mole and their children were out of food. They were almost starved. Their nearest neighbors, Skimchist, the black bear, and Charis, kingfisher, had plenty to eat. Bear and kingfisher always had plenty to eat. Coyote knew this. He said to his wife, Pulau, I'm going over the ridge and see your brother, Skimchist. He may give me something for us to eat. Coyote went to Bear's lodge. Bear and his wife had no children. Coyote noticed that they had nothing in their lodge but some bedding and a klachin, cooking basket. There were no signs of food, which made Coyote wonder. For a while he sat in silence, then he yawned. Bear knew what that meant. It was a hunger yawn. Bear turned to his wife and said, put the rock in the fire and bring water in the basket. Your brother is hungry. Bear's wife placed a rock in the fire and went after water. Coyote wondered where the food was to come from, and he yawned again. Bear's wife returned with a cooking basket nearly full of water. Bear took his flint knife and cut a piece of buckskin from his wife's robe. He pressed the piece into a lump, and when the rock in the fire was red hot, he dropped the rock and the lump of buckskin into the cooking basket. Then he rubbed ashes on his wife's robe, and the robe became whole again. It did not show where it had been cut. As soon as the water in the basket boiled, Bear emptied a big bag of pebbles into it. Coyote thought he wouldn't care for such food, buckskin and pebbles. But when the basket was placed before him, he tasted the food and quickly changed his mind. For the buckskin had become fine, tender meat, and the pebbles were juicy huckleberries. Coyote ate all of the soup and the huckleberries and some of the meat, but he saved most of the meat for Mole and the children. Let me carry this meat home in your cooking basket, he said to Bear. All right, Bear answered. You can send it back by one of your children, but Coyote insisted that Bear come for the basket, that he should come and visit him, but Bear did not want to. But Coyote kept insisting until Bear said, I will come for the basket. Now, I can't read the whole thing, so I'll read the last two pages. Pulau, I'm going to see your brother Charis. Maybe he will give us something to eat. And he went to Kingfisher's teepee. Invited in, he entered and sat down. He saw nothing to eat in there. He yawned. Kingfisher knew what that meant, and he spoke to the older of his two children. My son, he said, go and bring me three willows. Boy, Kingfisher went out. He returned soon with three willow sticks, which Kingfisher took and heated over the fire. When they were hot, he twisted them to make them strong and tied them to his belt. Then he flew to the top of the lodge and from there to the river, where he dove through a hole in the ice. He came up with the willow sticks strung with fish. These were for his neighbor, Coyote. Kingfisher's wife cooked the fish. Coyote ate his fill, but some were left for him to take to Mole and the children. May I carry these fish home in your cooking basket, he asked. Yes, take the basket, said Kingfisher. Send it back by one of your children. No, I want you to visit me, Coyote replied. You come over tomorrow and get the basket. Kingfisher had no wish to visit Coyote, but Coyote coaxed him, and at last he agreed. and the next sun he walked to Kayuri's lodge. My son, said Kayuri to the eldest of his sons, as Kingfisher sat down, go and bring me 3 willows. What do you want them for? Boy Kayuri asked. How will you use them? You must know why I want the 3 willows. Kayuri scolded. You always have brought them to me. But Kayuri said nothing more. He went out and got 3 willow sticks, and his father heated them over the fire and twisted them, as he had seen Kingfisher do. He tied the sticks to his belt and tried to fly to the top of the lodge. He had a hard time climbing there without breaking down the whole teepee. From the lodge top, he jumped for a hole in the river ice. He missed, and the hole smashed on the ice and was killed. Kingfisher had been watching from the doorway and smiling to himself. He walked over to where Kayuri lay. Taking the willow sticks from Kayuri's belt, he tied them to his own belt and dove through the hole in the ice. When he came up, he said he had the willow sticks heavy with fish. These he placed beside Kayuri and stepped over him 3 times. That brought Kayuri back to life. Then Kingfisher said, this is my way, not yours, Sleep. I do not try to imitate others as you do. Kingfisher took his basket and went home. And Kayuri went back to his teepee. He carried the fish that Kingfisher had caught. He gave them to Mole to cook. See, we have plenty to eat now, Kayuri laughed. We have plenty for my imitating bear and Kingfisher. That is why I imitated them. The end of the story.
Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.